For everybody's sake, and for the recording's sake, it was observed in some not small amount of panic that there is a quiz next week. And yes, it is actually in the syllabus that is posted on the website. And it is going to be only over amines. It will not cover anything with carbohydrates we've done. So no Fisher projections yet, no A, D, L, beta, whatever. No sugars yet. Sugar chemistry will be on the exam, though. So don't make this mistake of wait until the last day to practice our structure drawing. But you don't have to panic about it for Tuesday. Now, as far as amines, the main topic we've had has been acid-base properties of amines. And, oh boy, you better believe I'm going to be asking about that. So we had three distinct classes of amines that we compared on Tuesday. We had non-cyclic, non-aromatic, or even if they're cyclic, the point is they're not aromatic amines. Then we had aniline, which has got next door to it aromaticity. And then we have pyrrole, which is itself aromatic. We had three very different acidities, or acidities of their conjugates. And so I'm going to be asking something about that. You're going to start seeing the list of reactions that can be used to form amines. And many of these reactions you've already seen. So we're going to be re-studying, but recognize you're not learning a whole set of new reactions. A few new ones, but a lot of repeat from the past. So Tuesday's lecture on acids bases, today's lecture on synthesis of amines, and whatever we do tomorrow, that will constitute the quiz on Tuesday. Then the lab quiz we already reviewed this morning, those three labs, that will be on the lab quiz on Thursday. So let's look at a list of the reactions we're going to be doing. And I didn't look up page numbers, but these are section numbers, and actually this was all taken from that A10 index in your back of the book, plus a little bit other flipping around. So first one that I think we already were tackling on Tuesday is creating amines by SN2 from alkyl halides, which we already discussed, it's problematic, but it's still used for certain reasons, and I'll show you one of those reasons today. Another SN2 type of reaction, reduction of alkyl azides. We have hydrogenation of nitriles, which also you can make those through SN2. We just came out of the chapter where we're talking about reduction of amides. We'll recover the mechanism for that. Along with that, we'll talk about the reduction of imines. And then a variation of that, these will actually be presented together. It's called reductive amination. Now, I know I myself am going to slip up on this word, but realize this is not a drawing class. We're not making animations. We're making amination to make an amine. A sneaky way of using an amide to make an amine is the Gabriel synthesis, sometimes called the thalamide synthesis. We don't talk about nitro groups much, but on benzene compounds they show up a lot. And so there's the reduction of nitro groups. And then there's two reactions not in your text, which we'll get to tomorrow. These are the Curtius and Hoffman rearrangements. And I have to apologize ahead of time. Hoffman, the name, always has given me problems because some people spell it with two N's and some people spell it with one, and both show up in chemistry. And I can never, no matter how many times I've tried to do it, for some reason that little thing just doesn't sit in my brain well. I'm guessing this is one, but if you look it up later, I already told you,
Yeah. Might be spelt wrong. But we have these two rearrangements. There's also, not as far as synthesis of amines, but a couple reactions that we're going to cover. One is the Hoffman elimination, which some of you might remember that as a term from Chem 12A to mean the opposite of Zaitsev elimination. But there's actually a reaction that is specifically called the Hoffman elimination, and that's one we need to cover. And in fact, that's related to this SN2 synthesis of amines from alkyl halides. We also need to talk about aromatic amines. Because aniline, aromatic amine, is a particularly reactive aromatic compound. So much so that in a lot of reactions, you don't even need a strong electrophile to get electrophilic aromatic substitution to occur. Because it's yet one more case where the lone pair of nitrogen is heavily delocalized with the benzene ring. So this is the overview. We're just going to start attacking these one by one. So at the end there, where the boxes, the brackets are, those are the section numbers. These two rearrangements, I'm not sure why they're not in the textbook. I have a feeling that I have a secret twin somewhere in the universe that's writing this book, because I also haven't ever particularly cared for amines, but I am surprised that there's not even a chapter on them, so I'm not quite sure what's going on here. But I'll make sure to cover those very carefully, since you don't have a textbook to refer to on those. Yes? Yes? Oh, I'm sorry, that's kind of blurry, isn't it? It is a 17. Let's see if I can. That's a little better. So let's go back. Oh, no, before that. You won't see why it's related today, but there's one small topic from the carboxylic acids chapter that I have to throw into here, which is about thermodynamically unstable carboxylic acids. One of which you all are quite familiar with, I'm sure. Those of you who walked into lab with soft drinks. What acid is this? Carbonic acid. Which is where we get carbonated drinks from. But why does that mean that we have fizzy drinks? What do you know happens to carbonic acid? It decomposes into carbon dioxide. It spontaneously decomposes into carbon dioxide, which is not unusual for single carbon molecules that have too many electron withdrawing heteroatom groups on them. I probably told this story, but it is related to this topic right here. Where, as part of our graduate degrees at Berkeley, we go through a qualifying exam period. And we do, it's actually not qualifying exam like other places do. It's a defense of the thesis, but we also have a proposal we're supposed to come up with. The idea being that if we're being trained to be chemists, that they want to see if we can go to the literature, come up with an original idea of research of our own to do, and then design the experiments and be prepared to defend it. Not that you actually do it in real life, but once you graduate, could you go off and do it? So I came up with a proposal for something that I wanted to use this particular molecule, bromomethanol, as the starting material. And I started presenting it, and about 2-3 minutes into it, one of the people on my panel speaks up and says, "Where are you going to get that starting material?" And I thought, Aldrich, Fisher, one of the major chemical companies. His point was, though,
That doesn't exist. That also spontaneously decomposes back into formaldehyde and HBr, which means it wouldn't work very well with my proposal, so I still made it out, you know. I learned. You learn from your mistakes. But related story then. There are many of these single carbon molecules that will decompose. In fact, any time that you have something that looks like a carboxylic acid and has one of these side groups that has an oxygen or a nitrogen in it, those are the types of compounds that decompose. So carbonic acid does it. Carbonates can do it as well. So this is a singly substituted carbonate. But again, in many cases, in which a carbonyl is part of a carboxylic acid, and has a heteroatom also attached to it. The acid can or will decarboxylate. So with some heat, this will turn into methanol and carbon dioxide. If you didn't have the hydrogen there, though, if you have the salt, then it can survive. So carboxylic acid salts are stable. If I replace that methyl group with a hydrogen, that's the hydrogen carbonate ion. And we know that we can buy sodium hydrogen carbonate, sodium bicarbonate. It's once bicarbonate gains the next proton, though, and you end up with an acid, that it then decomposes. So up top I have carbonic acid. There is another related compound, carbamic acid. That will also decompose, in this case, into ammonia and carbon dioxide. However, if instead of the acid, we had another amino group, one of the first compounds, organic compounds to be synthesized, period. Urea, having two amino groups, prevents it from decomposing. So the reason I'm showing you this is that in one of our synthesis of amines, we're going to go through one of these intermediates, and it's going to be by decarboxylation that we release the amine. We're also going to be learning a new way to make amides later on when we return to amino acids and proteins. And again, in that same procedure, we're going to take advantage of this instability of certain classes of carboxylic acids. So I figured before we get too far away from that chapter, since we just left those groups last week, wanted to introduce this idea now. Questions? Yeah. It's fun. Right here? Oh, I don't know why I wrote D. Well, I do, because delta is D, but I had delta. The left side of the brain was not communicating very well with the right side. All right, well, let's now get to this list of amine reactions, amine-forming reactions.
So first one, we already talked about alkyl halide synthesis, and we talked about how usually it doesn't work out so well. Because, for example, if we had a primary amine that reacted with something like methyl iodide, recall that methyl iodide is a fantastic substrate for SN2 because it's got such little steric hindrance. But on Tuesday, we talked about acidity of amine conjugates, so of ammonium salts, in which, therefore, we got at the basicity of amines themselves. So which of these two amines on this page is the stronger base? The one on the right, correct. Which, if it's a stronger base, it's a better nucleophile, which means you're going to continue having reaction with methyl iodide. Since I used an iodide to begin with, I'm going to have an iodide salt at the end. This process, I don't know if I gave this title or not, is called exhaustive methylation, or alkylation in general. Exhaustive means you do it until it can't happen anymore. And that's what we've done in this case. So if you wanted to make a quaternary ammonium salt, this is a good way to do it. But if you're trying to just substitute once, not such a good approach. But there's another reaction that can be done with these kinds of salts. And that's to use an aqueous solution of silver oxide. Now, turn the Wayback Machines back to Chem 1A. Solubility of ionic compounds. What do you know about salts of silver? Are they normally soluble? Oh, do we remember our solubility rules? Nitrates are soluble, perchlorates are soluble, acetates are soluble, carbonates aren't normally. What about silver? The most common solubility rule that's exploited in problems everywhere. Silver ions are soluble except in the presence of halides, right? Silver chloride, silver bromide, they're very, very, very insoluble. Well, I have a salt that has a halide. I'm exposing it to silver oxide. What if the halide were to combine with silver and precipitate out? Well, effectively what we'll be left with, turns out, is hydroxide. This is a way of sneakily converting this into a hydroxide salt. Why do we care about that? Because when you heat it, it eliminates to make the thermodynamically less favorable product. Notice also, it is a way, therefore, to take an amine and convert it into another functional group. This is the Hoffman elimination. Now, why this occurs, we'll get into tomorrow, because I forgot yet again to go back and see at what depth it's presented in your textbook. Some textbooks get into the stability of the transition state where we use Neuwen projections to talk about sterics, which if your textbook does it, so will we. But just in case, don't want to go too heavy here yet. But let me just emphasize, it's the silver oxide that's using a trick of solubility to force iodide off the salt. And silver iodide in aqueous solution ends up producing hydroxide that ends up being the counter ion instead.
So we'll return to this tomorrow, but wanted to present it since it's related to SN2 reactions. Let's move to the next one now, which is also an SN2 reaction, but this is reduction of acyl azides. I'm sorry, alkyl azides, not acyl, that's something else. Yes?
Where's, is that what word? Traps. Captures.
T. T as in telos. So what's an alkyl azide? Well, the azide ion itself is N3-, which if you can't quite recall, has this Lewis dot structure to it. Or at least for the ion itself, that's the best Lewis dot structure because it's symmetric. This is a somewhat basic, good nucleophile. So if we had a primary alkyl halide, for example, we could get SN2 substitution. We then use lithium aluminum hydride and an acid source to make the amine. Notice I am not showing you the mechanism, because I don't want you to get worried about how the azide ion gets reduced. To sort of hand wave it a bit though, if you notice the structure of azide, you've got nitrogen gas kind of sort of trapped in there. And nitrogen gas ends up getting expelled in this reaction. That's how we end up with a single nitrogen instead of three of them. This is partly why, though, that these compounds can be a bit problematic to handle, because many azides are explosive, as the recent capture of that underwear bomber has shown, because I think it was lead azide that was in the system there. So, can be problematic materials, but they can be used to make amines. So, if I didn't show you the mechanism again, it means you don't have to know the mechanism. In fact, when we get to amines on the exam, it is going to be more focused, except for those rearrangements, on synthesis, short synthesis, not on mechanism. So let's move to the next one. Also a short one then, because it's also without mechanism, which would be the reduction of nitriles. Now, nitrile can be synthesized also by SN2 reaction using cyanide ion. And then we can reduce it using lithium aluminum hydride. That's one way we could approach it. Or we could also hydrogenate. Now, I think for your text, it shows rainy nickel instead of platinum or palladium being used. It could be because the nitrile is a less reactive group than other functional groups. And rainy nickel is this finely divided nickel, this really powdered stuff that has lots of surface area, lots of place for a reaction to take place. And also has hydrogen already absorbed on it, so it's quite reactive in its own right. That can be used to reduce the triple bond to a single bond. But notice that the product contains one more carbon compared to the alkyl halide it came from. Now, hydrogenation, I know back in 12A we talked about how those occur, where the hydrogen first is absorbed onto the metal, then one hydrogen, then the other adds to the same face of whatever bond it's reducing, but you can't really write that very well as a mechanism. So again, there's no mechanism to know
other than I hope we all still know what the SN2 mechanism is. The first step of both those reactions, it's just SN2. So any questions on these short reactions? Then a little bit more info on reduction of amides. So I think I already had a reduction of an amide on a question this quarter. But I still want you to know the mechanism. And since we had that fill-in-the-blank problem on the test with an amide, let me go ahead and use that as the way to re-show the mechanism. So on that test problem, we used lithium aluminum deuteride instead. So I'll show D minus deprotonating. Oh, and I guess I better do this properly, because the way that we did it before was to show the molecule itself so that we can highlight that after this deprotonation that occurs, which realize this deprotonation does happen first for this kind of amide, one that does have a hydrogen on it. Reason we show the full molecule of aluminum deuteride though, is because we end up with the nitrogen equivalent of an enolate. Which then complexes with the aluminum. There's then a transfer, normally of hydrogen, in this case deuterium. Transfer of that deuterium back to the carbon-nitrogen bond. So this is like the reduction of an imine, which is coming up next. And then here's the reason that the ring does not open. Because at this point, we have a negatively charged nitrogen that is able to expel the oxygen as a leaving group. That leaves us with a true imine that then gets reduced. And it turns out you don't need something as strong as lithium aluminum hydride or deuteride to reduce an imine. But since you're already under those conditions, it's certainly going to get reduced. Oh, and I made a big, huge, giant mistake in the structure before. The whole point of this, showing this, is to show that deuterium appears at that point, as well as this next point when the next reduction occurs. Then the last step is for nitrogen to get reprotonated. May I steal that back? I'm sorry, I got that the other day, by the way. No, I need to not make mistakes, is what I need to do. So at this point, we would switch conditions so it's allowable to have H plus. Which now we have our neutral product. So as a general approach, though, amides certainly can be reduced to make amines. Yes?
HD would be released as hydrogen gas, yes. All right, let's move on now to reduction of imines, and at the same time, I'm going to show you reductive amination. They're related because the same reagents can show up in both of these reactions. Reductive amination is the following, where you take some kind of aldehyde, for example, react it with ammonium gas at the same time that you react it with another reagent, often hydrogen on palladium. Now, apparently have never used this designation before, PD/C. What that means is palladium on carbon. It's another way of grinding up and putting the metal on some kind of support surface that again provides lots of surface area, makes it more reactive. So you could just consider it as palladium. I think I only did this because your book did it too, but I probably never showed you in 12A, so that C confused people yesterday. But in other words, you have simultaneous reaction with ammonia and hydrogen. Now, carbonyls don't easily get reduced by just hydrogen gas. It's not impossible, but you have to whale them on a little bit. Turns out that imines, however, are more easily reducible. So what happens is that the ammonia can react with the aldehyde to form an imine. Once that imine forms, the hydrogen takes over, and you end up hydrogenating it to an amine. Another variation could be used to be used a reducing agent. You might say, wait a minute, reducing agent, sodium borohydride, doesn't that react in protic solvents? Yes, but there's an alternate version of sodium borohydride that can be used, often is used in these cases where you might have a mildly acidic environment. The reagent is sodium cyanoborohydride. Notice I wrote pH 5. In this case, I've shown you the imine already being prepared. I'm going to show you another case where it's not yet prepared, but this still works. pH 5 is the optimal pH for making imine. Sodium cyanoborohydride, the cyano group, allows this to withstand pH 3 even for a moderate amount of time, which means if you had a 1 molar solution of acetic acid even, that's pretty darn tolerant for a hydride source. So this will reduce the imine to an amine. Yes, I certainly can. Now, this imine, and I already jumped to making the imine, we could have made from that same aldehyde and ammonia. Oh no, not ammonia, because this case I do have a methyl group. So this came from a primary amine. Can you make an imine from a secondary amine? No, that's when enamines would form. So what do you think is going to happen if we tried to do this? If we take some kind of ketone, let's say, and react it with a secondary amine with a little acid at the same time that we react it with sodium cyanoborohydride. Turns out you get the reductive amination product. Because, yes, you can't form an imine. The best you could do is get to this intermediate. because there's no other hydrogen that can be eliminated to allow that carbon-nitrogen double bond to persist. But think of it this way. That double bond wants to get rid of that plus charge. If you have a hydride attack the carbon, it pushes the double bond open, gets rid of the plus charge. This will react as an intermediate with the sodium cyanoborohydride, and so you get a tertiary amine as a response. However, since that double bond never forms, if you use a tertiary amine, this is as good as we can do. But very common way, in fact, that first reaction or something like it is a very common industrial way to do these kinds of reactions. Have sets of reagents that can act and be present simultaneously. So down below here, this is specifically, or the middle one I should say, that is the reduction of an imine. It's just a pure reduction of imine. But these other two are examples of reductive amination. Questions on any of the reactions we've done up to this point? Now, I know this is lots of reactions, but again, notice that we're just focusing on simple transformations. You notice it's been a long, long time since I've been talking about stereochemistry, regiochemistry, the synthetic utility, all that. This one, it's going to be focused on reagents and products. We know that we're trying to make amines. What are all the different ways that I could make an amine? For example, if I said, here's an amine, can you show me six ways to synthesize it? Which was a question on every year's past quiz or test at some point on amines. Did you all just miss the hint that went flying by you? For those of you who just woke up to the hint, do you want me to give it to you again? Yes. The hint is, here's an amine. I've shown you already five, six different ways to make amines. So if I gave you a random amine, can you show me six different synthesis routes to get there? The answer right now is yes, but you need to remember all those routes. Now, question. Quiz, lecture quiz Tuesday, lab quiz Thursday. Yes. All right, there's no questions. Let's push forward because we got a couple more we need to get through today. Ah, kind of an interesting one. This is the Gabriel thalamide synthesis. So, another scary reference to your Chem 1A days. Do you all remember the titration lab where you had to standardize with KHP? Potassium hydrogen phthalate. Does anybody even remember that reagent? Well, there it is. So phthalic acid is benzene dioic acid. Which, under the right conditions, can be converted to this compound. Which is called, oops. Thalimide. Remember, an imide is a nitrogen equivalent of an anhydride. So what's special about this thalimide? It will not undergo SN2 reaction by itself. Why?
Well, think about the reactivity of functional groups. Amides, amides were one of the low reactivity groups for two reasons. We talked about it from two perspectives, actually. The fact that nitrogen is a horrible leaving group. So if you attack the carbonyl, nitrogen won't want to be kicked out. The other reason is that lone pair is so heavily conjugated with the carbonyl. Well, now it's conjugated with two different carbonyls, so it really couldn't be bothered to react. So only if we deprotonate this is that base then going to be able to do alkylation, which this is easy to deprotonate because the lone pair would be so heavily delocalized. I don't remember the pKa, but I know that it's easily deprotonated by potassium hydroxide. So normally N minus like this is tough to produce, but not in this case. It is still pretty basic, so you really need a primary alkyl halide for this to work best. But the point is, it would work. And because you have an unreactive amide as a product, you don't have multiple substitution. So let me just write a note in here that the nitrogen the lone pair on nitrogen is so heavily delocalized with the carbonyls, plural, that it is not basic enough, or better way to say is not nucleophilic enough, to undergo SN2. Therefore, multiple alkylation doesn't occur. KOH, potassium hydroxide. KHP, one of each. That's why it's called KHP, potassium hydrogen phthalate. Phthalate would be if you had just two minus charges, one on each oxygen. Hydrogen phthalate means put hydrogen in one. Potassium hydrogen means put potassium in one, hydrogen in the other. It's kind of like the names for the carbonic acid derivatives. You have the carbonate ion, you have HCO3, which is called bicarbonate, but it's also called hydrogen carbonate. Same naming system here. Meaning that nitrogen, because it's got a lone pair, in theory you would think could attack another alkyl halide. So you see how the first attack occurs because of the N minus? You still have another lone pair, which when we saw the reactions on Tuesday, that lone pair kept reacting. But it doesn't here because it's not available. It's tied up with the carbonyls. So in fact, that's the last sentence I want to throw into this, which is multiple alkylation does not occur. So if you then saponified, we don't particularly care what happens to the carboxylic acid portion of it, but the amine will be released as a response. So it's a controlled way of making primary amines. That's the Gabriel amine synthesis. Now let's see, we've only got a little time left.
So let me just show you one last
quick reaction,
and then we will be out of time for today. So that's the reduction of nitro compounds. So we have something like nitrobenzene. It can be reduced to form aniline. Where we'll pick up with on Friday is, again, with this kind of compounds because of this situation. Just to make sure that this does happen, I'll throw an acid catalyst in there. What's going to be the product of this reaction? Ooh. But is the lone pair on the nitrogen here basic? No, not really. That's what we went over on Tuesday. So that methyl iodide is not likely to substitute on the nitrogen. What kind of reaction is this, though? Aromatic substitution, right? Electrophilic aromatic substitution. So methyl group's going to go on there on the ortho or para position, correct? But is a methyl group an activator or a deactivator? No, an activator, because remember that because of hyperconjugation, alkyl groups add electron density to the benzene ring. Well, that means we're going to make a more reactive compound because we'll have two activators on the ring. And the point of this example is that aniline is so reactive that it likes to multiply substitute. And so what we're going to see first tomorrow is how can we control this? How can we make it less reactive?